The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
It's time for our Friday Forum. I'm joined by Emer Higgins, TD, Fine Gael, TD for Dublin Midwest, Minister of State with responsibility for business, employment and retail in the Department of Enterprise, Trade and Employment for the moment, as government formation is still underway. Gary Gannon, TD, Social Democrats, TD for Dublin Central, and Kevin Doyle, Group Head of News at Media House, Executive Editor of the Irish Independent. Good morning and welcome to you all. Gary, you've ruled yourselves out of government.
It wasn't that much that we ruled ourselves out. There didn't seem to be a huge level of appetite for us from Fianna Fáil in particular.
What was wrong with you? What made you a pariah to Micheál Martin?
We had this really radical idea of actually talking about policy in a really in-depth way, and it didn't seem to be an appetite for it. So we made a commitment to our voters that we wanted to be part of government. We had these deal breakers that we are going to push quite heavily.
What were they?
So in terms of housing, childcare, sláinte care, energy.
Sounds like what, you know, mum and apple pie, what everyone
no,
wants.
No, but it's not that. How these things are paid for is also really important. It's not mum and apple pie. It's actually the basis of most republics.
What I'm saying is that everyone wants these things.
Yeah, but when you get into the meat of them, it's how they're delivered. So 50,000 affordable homes, for example. We have the idea of rezoning land for affordable, how that's paid for. That's all going to be very, very different. Publicly funded childcare, obviously everyone does want that. We can't have that and also erode the tax base in the way that some other parties would like to be doing. So they're the discussions that we are going in on. Look, we had a couple of meetings, but I don't think, we weren't the path of least resistance. I think it was very clear from when the numbers after the election were there, it was going to be Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael and a number of different independents.
And they haven't sorted out the independents yet, those talks underway, and the Healy Razor in the mix as well. So, Emer, would Fine Gael have welcomed the Sock Dems? I mean, Gary seems to think it was Fianna Fáil was the problem, the issue here.
Yeah, well, I suppose I'm not necessarily part of the government formation discussions, but yeah, my understanding from the briefing we would have gotten last night at our own parliamentary party meeting was that there was really good, engaging and meaningful discussions with Sock Dems between Fine Gael and them. Obviously, Social Democrats have made their own decision. Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael are going to be the pillars of the next government. Of that, I'm quite sure. In my opinion, we've worked together very well over the last government. I hope we'll work together well over this government. We obviously campaigned.
But you had no particular
absolutely
problem
not.
With Gary and his
no, absolutely not.
Like, I mean, we didn't get the substantial government formation talks at that point. There were exploratory talks, but I mean, the numbers don't lie. And also in terms of, we would have been striking a very, very, very hard bargain in terms of which way we would have went for. And like, I appreciate that that's not where the mood is from Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael.
Your dispassionate observation.
Well, I think it's been quite clear from the day after the results came in that independence was the direction of travel here. There is an opinion, and Gary will disagree with it, obviously, that that there's perhaps a flakiness or a risk within the Sock Dems that, yes, that if they came in, would they last 5 years? And you can be sure that Micheál Martin and Simon Harris do not want to go back to the electorate again, having just got back in. I'm not saying it's true, Gary, but this is how they view you before you jump on it. But their view is they want to get 5 years out of this. They don't want to go back out. And the truth is, if you do a deal with 7, 8, 9, 10 independents, you can afford to lose Michael and Danny Healy-Ray in 18 months' time because they're upset over something.
The old thing that Seamus Brennan quoted about their dad, you know, once he was bought, he stayed bought.
Yeah, and so most of those independents,
stick with it for 5 years.
There's a couple of newbies in there who obviously there would be a little bit of, I suppose they're an unknown quantity. But if you look at most of the names, Boxer Moran has done a full term, Sean Canny has done a full term, Michael Lowry has done multiple terms, albeit not in government, but supporting government. So they all have, quite a number of them have a history and they're confident they'll go the full term. So if you're Micheál Martin and you want to get back in as Taoiseach as soon as possible, that's the obvious safe
no
route.
Independent who wants to retain their seat will ever want to pay for another election too soon.
Exactly. And I mean, we saw that last time. The Independent Alliance, Shane Ross's, I was going to call them a cartel, but that's definitely the wrong word. But Shane Ross's group that supported the Fine Gael government previously, they got wiped out after it. So the Greens got wiped out this time. So if you're the smaller party in government, you want to go 5 years because you want to last as long as you can because there's no guarantee.
I want to stay with you, Kevin, for the moment while we talk about a related matter, which is the report from the Gardaí on the Moriarty Tribunal finally going to the DPP. And of course, Michael Lowry would be central to all of that. And some kind of muttering from the two principal pillars, as Emer called it, of the forthcoming government about that.
Yeah, I think the first thing is there was quite, I think there was a lot of surprise in the Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil ranks that this had popped up now. The timing here is, I suppose, unfortunate at best for them, that this is going to the DPP. And we know from previous experience that anything that goes to DPP, there won't be a decision on this in the next month. That will now drag on and will come out at some stage what direction of travel there is. But I think
we can't suggest that anyone in the Gardaí had an agenda.
Oh, not at all.
To discomfort Michael Lowry.
No, it's unfortunate. But for if you're sitting there and you're dealing with Michael Lowry. But a thing happened where Michael Lowry became kind of the, and I mean, this has been denied, but he is the kingpin to some extent. Because he is the longest standing of all of these, he has the most experience.
He doesn't want a job,
and he doesn't want a job. So, in some ways, he is an honest broker in this context. But I think there is an uncomfortableness now that he kind of became that kind of chief negotiator. And also, if you saw when Verona Murphy became Ciarán Cóirla, she specifically thanked him in her first speech, which raised a lot of eyebrows about why did she specifically have to go and single Michael Lowry out. So there is a discomfort there, but they're going to go ahead.
All right. Now, Eimear, your take on this. Any discomfort in Fine Gael over the Moriarty Tribunal report? Well, it's the report went to the Gardaí. The Gardaí then investigate. They send a file to the DPP. But nothing that was said or taken down in evidence in the Moriarty Tribunal can actually be used. They have to go and start again in their investigations.
Yes, that's my understanding. So this is going to be quite a lengthy process. Ultimately, I suppose politics should never influence with the independence of Gardaí Síochána or a DPP inquiry in any way. And I don't know what's in the file. I've no crystal ball. I can't determine what the DPP are going to say. But I suppose the main thing is that it would be improper or inappropriate for us to comment too detailed on this. What's really clear is that we know that Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael are going to be the makeup of the next government. We know that together they're one TD short of having a dull vote to back up that government. We would obviously like a strong working majority, which would mean more than one TD to support us in that regard. But the government will be made up of ministers. And I don't envisage Michael Lowry being a minister in the next government.
He's already indicated that he doesn't want that job. Gary, what's your take on the timing of this? Is it just the cogs of justice grind slowly? And when they spit out something, they spit it out irrespective of the political background.
Well, I hope that is the case.
You'd hope that's
it. And let's assume that it is. And while I can't speak to the process for obvious reasons, we can actually talk to the process, to the findings of the Moriarty Tribunal, which all of the political parties, Fine Gael, accepted at the time. And while accepting it, also made it very clear that Michael Lowry were people who Michael Martin said should have resigned his seat at the time. I mean, in the 14 years that have passed, I'm not sure what has come to pass that has actually dissuaded them of that notion. And look, I accept that Micheál Martin and we're saying that Michael Lowry doesn't want a job in government, but power is its own form of currency, and he has wielded that very well from what I can see over the last number of years in terms of passing notes across the chamber when I wasn't there, talking about a job for people in his own constituency, Verona Murphy being able to thank him for the Ciarán Cóirla job. So when you may not want an official job, he does want to be very close to the realms of power.
Yeah, but don't forget, we have a Ciarán Cóirla now who feels that she will have more influence with ministers than otherwise have been the case had she been a mere independent TD for Wexford.
And this is the risk of working with independents, because independents are sole operators. They're answerable to nobody, effectively. And Verona Murphy doesn't have to win her seat back because she'll get that back automatically. But you still want to be seen to be serving your people in your constituency, because that is ultimately the
and
job.
And she made that declaration on local radio in Wexford. Yeah. And much to dismay, I think, in certain quarters. And certainly when I heard it, I thought she had ruled herself out of it automatically by saying that about the job of Ciarán Cóirla. I thought, how can you do that? How can you actually say that I'm going to have more influence with ministers and remain impartial? But I don't know.
Again, this is the muddying of the reforms that have been taking place over the last, 10 years in terms of how Parliament's operating, particularly in relation to the Ciarán Cóirla position. There has been some reforms. Ciarán Cóirla was seen as a fair arbitrator between Parliament. But quite clearly now, it's just actually something that has been done as part of a government deal, a backroom deal. And what we're really seeing at the moment is a door slightly ajar to deals that have probably been taking place for a long, long time. And that's what we're getting an indication.
Well, the truth is, Michael Lowry has operated in the shadows. And I don't mean that in a derogatory way. But he has a revolving door to ministers for years, because he was voting time in, time out, through the tough and thin, through motions of confidence. He has stuck with governments in recent years. And for that reason, he is rewarded for better and worse. And the reward might just be a tip off that there's a grant coming for a school or a road or something like that. But that is what plays out well when you're the first person on local radio, like Verona Murphy, to tell that the extension to the local school is going ahead. Well, you get some of the credit for it. And that's his payback.
Yeah. And you know, I go back when I think of the Moriarty Tribunal. We know that politicians generally, when they get the good news, they pass it on straight away and they try to take credit for the good news. And sometimes that might be misrepresented of having actually done something to deliver the good news.
It's a very funny one, actually, Gary. It relates to your constituency because I live out in the north side of Dublin last night, where all the local WhatsApp group, there was a campaign to save the number 11 bus. And there have been moves on it, I think, which are going to be announced in the next 48 hours. And every local councillor, no matter what party they were in, were putting this up on Facebook and Twitter and into WhatsApp groups before it was even confirmed, claiming credit. I've been working hard on this. It was
Gary, like, have you saved the 11 bus?
Well, that was actually a campaign I initiated before the general election. Quite literally.
But for some example of what you're talking about, Pat.
Yeah, I was also excluded from the updated meeting in a couple of days, so much of my doubt was the case. So I will update your listeners shortly, Pat.
All right, anyway, we'll wait to see what developments come from the DPP. Could be mid-term of this government.
I think it won't be in the coming months anyway, you can be sure of that.
Now, we'll stay, since all politics is local, we'll stay with the weather warnings and whether or not they should have been more local than widespread. Eimear.
Yeah, well, I suppose there's definitely a bit of sense to that. Met Aaron, I think, have done a really good job of being able to predict, being able to get the weather warnings out there, being able to provide that context for advice for people so they know what to expect. But ultimately, snow has fallen in a way that has been very localised to many communities. There are some communities that were terribly badly affected, and in terms of water as well as roads, and in terms of power as well, those communities have felt isolated. And that's despite the best efforts of our road gridders and councils up and down the country.
No, but the question of the sensitivity of the warnings. For example, this morning when I was coming in, it was +4. Mm. And elsewhere in the country, it was -6. On this tiny island of ours, to have a 10 degree difference in temperature is quite extraordinary. Yeah. So it just shows how, even in a small island, how local the weather can be and whether or not we should be more detailed or forensic in delivering those warnings.
And I suppose that goes to show how difficult a job that Met Aaron have to be able to predict in such a localised fashion those changes. And ultimately, we have a National Emergency Coordination Group that have been meeting daily, sometimes more than that, over the last week in preparation for this cold snap. And thankfully, we're in a situation where we're looking towards thaw now.
Yeah, it will be, I think, national by Sunday.
Double digits by we'll have a warm winter warning by Sunday. I think it's getting up into 10
it's
or 12
interesting.
Degrees.
While I was away, I was looking at stuff online every day, but there was some statement from Met Aaron that AI was going to make forecasting more difficult.
I haven't seen that one. I would have thought anything technology-wise.
They had this new supercomputer they were tying into before Christmas that was going to make everything much more accurate.
Yeah, and you would imagine as time, and they have become much more accurate. Like if you go back to when I was a kid, the weather seemed to always be wrong, and it was kind of a running joke that they could never call it. Whereas now they are generally fairly right.
Well, there'll be rain in some places, it'll be overcast elsewhere. Expect a little sunshine.
Oh, no, it was a classic, yeah. Scattered showers and sunny spells was the forecast every day of the week. But it is far more accurate now. It is extraordinary that on a small island, I think one night during the week, Donegal was the only place without a orange warning. The other 25 counties,
but people from Donegal maintained that they were forgotten.
Of course. But then it was snowing in Donegal that night, and it wasn't anywhere else. Yeah. So
the UK system, which is applied obviously up north, does have applied kind of more localised factors in terms of the UK system. And look, it does have real world consequences. If you think, I remember last week Norma Foley putting out a statement that some schools have of their own volition whether they close or not. Let's face it, that places a very unfair burden on kind of school leaders. Whereas if you had a more kind of localised system, obviously taking the national factors, but working with local authorities to know which roads are likely to freeze, which trees are probably going to fall down, then actually you could have a warning by which the school wasn't in the kind of remit of the school leader as to whether people have to start taking the whole school.
But Gary, would you not be damned if you do and damned if you don't? Like, I'm from Offaly, right? And I was down home last weekend when the big freeze started, and there was parts of the county where it was frost, and there was parts of the county where it was covered in snow. And like, we operate in a county system. So how do you split Offaly to that point
The sooner the better, say yeah. some. But,
that technology is there. I mean, they do apply it up north, but actually working then, so it's not actually just under the responsibility of one skilled principal as to whether.
Yeah, but isn't that you actually use the term school leader?
Yes.
Isn't that what they're paid for? Getting the extra pay as a principal is to make decisions like that.
Yeah, but come on, Pat. When it actually comes down to that school leader and all the things they have to do in terms
I was only being slightly humorous there, but the idea that if some harm comes to someone.
Yes.
Forcing them to drive to school, be they teacher or parent with kids in the car, some harm comes because the school has opened.
And the school leader also knows best how the heating system is in their school, whether they have double glazed windows or it's likely to be really cold on the day, whether they're on a dodgy road or they're on a main road. You would imagine that the people local are the best positioned to make these calls.
But all the responsibility then coming on the school leader. You have the families who obviously have to take the time off work and everything like that. It does create an acrimony within a school community. And then one school closes, the school down the road does enclose. I mean, if the state or else locally, we could take that responsibility away, working with like a more
specific
weather
warning. But the precautionary principle would close all the schools when you have a slight dusting of snow. And that's like, you know, let's reduce the speed limit to 10 kilometres per hour so that we have no traffic accidents.
But that's the system we have at the moment where it's left on the school leader. Whereas actually we took that away, working with Erin, working with more local factors, such as the system they have up in the north, that actually would take a little bit of burden away. And that's just one example of where having this divergence, a one size fits all model, doesn't have local factors taken in.
But should there be educational leaders designated in counties who actually know every single school and they can review it and make a few phone calls and then make a decision for that region or that county?
I think that would
certainly
make
a logic in that. Maybe it's not the principal, but there is someone who oversees the Midlands and the certain counties.
And who'll have local knowledge of the kind of roads.
I suppose then you're back to this idea, as you said, Kevin, about Offaly being so different in one part of the county to another, that the people on the ground are the people who know this best. And while it's unfortunate that you're placing a burden of responsibility on them, they're ultimately the people who are going to be most mindful of their school community and the health and safety issues in those communities.
That's the state removing responsibility for these really big decisions.
No, I think like where we know there's a very clear warning in place, where we know there's an absolute clear warning in place. We've seen that in Ophelia, for example.
They make
decisions based on that, but where the warning is more localised and it's more specific to a local community, of course it makes sense that people on the ground make those decisions. They're best placed.
Now, some countries are going to be subject to a whirlwind. It's called Whirlwind Trump. Hurricane Trump, Greenland, for example, and Panama. What do you think, Gary? Is he going to militarise his tenure and start invading here, there and yon?
I mean, there is definitely precedent for when it comes to Panama. I mean, this happened in 1989, wasn't it? I mean, all the soundings are the exact same. I mean, this obsession that the US has with China now and China's access to the Panama Canal, I mean, that very clearly has the potential for real conflict. When it comes to Greenland, I mean, that's just an old-school land grab. I mean, that's very clearly there is potential for minerals, zinc, oil, with the potential for defrosting that comes with climate change. That place is going to open up. It's going to be more accessible for wheat and barley production. I mean, that's just an old-school opportunistic land grab. I think we have the EU within itself has to have a strong voice.
And Canada?
Again, that's probably less likely. That's just rhetoric. But,
he's already disrupted to the point that the Prime Minister is gone. Now, I don't think Trump is necessarily entirely responsible for Justin Trudeau walking off the pitch, but I think he certainly had a role in it. I think his re-election and the way he speaks about Canada and the way he speaks about Trudeau has certainly played a role in the fact that Trudeau has decided to throw his hands up and go, do you know what, I can't win back public favour here at all.
Yeah, and he went to Mar-a-Lago, did Trudeau, and abased himself in front of Trump. So
even there was a clip of, and I mean, if your listeners haven't seen it, Pat, it's worth going and looking at some of the clips from poor Jimmy Carter's funeral yesterday. But there is a trip where Trump walks past Trudeau when he's going up the aisle, and the face on Trudeau tells you more than he could ever say at a press conference about what he thinks about him. So I think it's clear that Trump wants to disrupt Denmark. It's a stable democratic state. Canada.
Disrupting the EU, which Trump is not aware enough to understand. Well, he sent the sun off as a rapporteur to Greenland during the week.
Yeah, and that clearly was plotted. It was almost like watching one of those terrible movies where like the lads go off on the private jet for the crack and, they get up to great fun while they're there. It was like, you know, they're there shooting selfies and shooting videos. Meanwhile, he's holding a press conference. And I was trying to imagine being the reporter at that press conference. And you're like trying to distill, what's my top line here? Because he's putting hell and fury in the Middle East. He's doing all sorts in America. He's capturing Greenland. He's renaming the Gulf of Mexico. It's crazy.
Eimear, your take on Trump?
I mean, it's geopolitical instability that you're describing there, Kevin. I hope we don't get to that. Obviously, Trump has made quite a lot of controversial musings over the last while. 10 days' time at this stage or so, he will take over and start to serve his second term. Nobody really, I don't think, can predict what will happen from that Trump administration. He's obviously put out an awful lot of musings. From a Greenland perspective, like, that's Danish territory, that's EU territory. So I suppose Olaf Scholz, France, a lot of people have come out strongly on that to say
a few people have steeled themselves, unlike the Canadians who are trying to get their act together. I mean, the Mexican president, she's played tough with Trump. Bring your tariffs on and we'll show you what we can do. Mm-hmm. The Honduran president has said there's a military base here. It's been here for decades. You haven't paid a cent in rent. Yeah. See what happens if you decide that you're going to deport a quarter of a million Hondurans from the United States.
And that's exactly why right now, and not to bring it back to Ireland, but ultimately that's what we're very concerned about from an Irish perspective. That's why right now we need strong and stable leadership, because we could potentially be facing economic shocks, and we want to make sure that we have strong and stable leadership from Ireland to see us through that.
That's why we didn't want to erode the tax base. But when you think about like where we are in the world, I mean, Trump is a chaos merchant, but we are going into a very, like China, for example, are going to respond in a really tactical response, where they're going to target their tariffs right at Trump's base in the agricultural heartland of the US. I mean, Trump has a tactic in his mind, I'm sure, and those around them. But the consequences of that coming back from him, there's also, I'm not sure if they're ready for those either, because the world is very different now.
I mean, be careful what you wish for is what people around Trump should be saying to him, Kevin.
Yeah, I mean, look, we did 4 years of Trump before. And if you think back, we all said at the time, it won't be as bad. You know, he ran the election campaign against Hillary Clinton. Some of the stuff that went on was shocking. Mm. But, you get into power and then you kind of steady the ship. His inauguration speech was jaw-dropping, if people remember.
Yeah, do you remember George Bush's, you could lip-read what he was saying. He said, if you'll pardon my French, this is some shit.
Yeah.
His body language yesterday as well.
So his inauguration speech was that, and within days he was bringing in the Muslim ban and doing a lot of the stuff that he said he would do. So, I mean, we can't write off anything. It's clear now that he's identified, he has three things really in his armoury. He has military might, which he is threatening to use. He has economic might, which he is threatening to use on the EU in particular. And then he has this cult of personality, which he will use to do down people like Justin Trudeau, or dare I say it, Micheál Martin or Simon Harris, should he decide he doesn't like them on a day of the week. So everyone's bowing before him.
The Israeli foreign minister calling the current Taoiseach an anti-Semite, and the kind of impact that has. Because people don't read the fine print. They don't look at the nuance. They look at the label.
Yeah, and the truth is that a lot of world leaders, while they're talking about it and they're saying that the influence of Musk and these other people in his cabal is terrible, actually, they're all kind of bowing down before him. We saw him go to Paris for Notre Dame, and he was welcomed almost like, he's not the president yet, but he was getting all the special treatment that a president would expect.
But Macron, it was said, was kind of playing him. You know, flattery is what gets places.
Yeah,
with
but
Trump.
That's what everyone's trying, is the flattery thing. The problem is, you flatter him, he also thinks he has a free pass on everything.
And emboldens him.
All right, before we go, I want to read something out, because earlier on we were talking about the alcohol bans which affect media from today, and it's no advertising of alcohol on television from 9 o'clock in the morning, from 9 o'clock in the, up to 9 o'clock in the evening, from 3 a.m. From 9 to 3 a.m. you can advertise alcohol on television, and on radio you can advertise up to 3 o'clock on weekdays when the kids are in school. Okay, anyway, it was suggested during that item that Diageo target children, and a Diageo spokesperson has been on. Diageo never targets its advertising towards children. We take our responsibility as a producer of adult products very seriously. We are subject to some of the strictest regulations of advertising in the world and comply with the legislation in place, including the PHAA and advertising and broadcasting codes, including the BAI, the ASAI and Copy Clear. So there you are. That's just to clarify from Diageo. Final New Year resolutions, Kevin?
Don't believe in them. January is a terrible time to try start do something new. Just survive. Get through
it. Get through January.
If you want to go back running, the summer is not a bad time to do it.
Okay, Eimear.
I'm going to hit my 10,000 steps a day. I definitely
did
faltered.
Did you not do that during the election?
That's not you. I was just going to say I faltered at some points last year, but I doubled and tripled that during the election. I'm going to try to keep it up.
Gary?
Yeah, just be more grateful as well. I mean, there's a lot of nastiness in the world, so taking time to be a little bit more grateful of things we have.
Things that we have. All right, on that note, thank you very much to Eimear Higgins, to Gary Gannon and to Kevin Doyle. A reminder that our items from today are uploaded as podcasts, which you can listen to on the News Talk app or by Go Loud. Just search for The Pat Kenny Show. My thanks to our team, Senior Producer Claire Darmody, Producer Niamh Dunn, Researchers Cian Burns and Kate Gunnell, Broadcast Assistant Amory Kane, Hugo De Silva on sound.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.